Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased true crime channel. First on the docket, Crystal Lee Kenny. Remember her, the nurse? Well, she's probably going home thanks to the appellate courts. Second, now the South Dakota Attorney General has a civil case he has to defend against. Third, an interesting statement made by the attorney in the Lori Vallow matter. Fourth, meet a guy who needs to go to prison, and wait till you hear for what. A hero makes a bad guy pay. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Thanks for joining me. If you haven't done so already, I'd ask that you please hit that subscribe button and also hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we put up new video or when we go live. Now, we have a busy docket today, and first on the docket is Crystal Lee Kenny. Do you remember that name? Does it ring a bell? That's right. That was Nurse Crystal Lee Kenny. She was the married woman who was having a relationship with Patrick Frazee, who was kind of her boyfriend, who thought that she was going to do terrible things to the mother of Patrick Frazee's child, Miss Kelsey Barrett. And Crystal Lee Kenny, in exchange for her cooperation and testimony at the trial of Patrick Frazee, received a pretty generous plea agreement for her case. It was a very good disposition for her. And I'm speaking from a criminal defense attorney's perspective. When you can plead guilty to one count of tampering with evidence, which is a class 6 felony, the lowest felony that we have here in the state of Colorado, and it carries a presumptive range in prison of between 12 and 18 months. Not very long considering you're charged with murder. Now, a sentence can be aggravated where it can increase to twice the presumptive range, so 12 months to 18 months, twice the presumptive max presumptive range is 36 months, 3 years, still a pretty good deal. Well, in Crystal Lee Kenny's plea agreement, she was agreeing that the judge could sentence her in the aggravated range. Now, she wasn't necessarily aggravated because she had no criminal history up until this point. Now, for a court to sentence somebody in the aggravated range, there has to be what there is known as aggravating factors. If one has an extensive criminal history, then the court can find aggravation. Also, by statute, if somebody was on probation, parole, and bond at the time, and they were ultimately convicted of that offense at the time of this new offense. But a United States Supreme Court case going back to the year 2000, it's called Apprendi v. New Jersey, and Blakely, which is another case from the United States Supreme Court, also states that if there's anything other than prior criminal history, that the aggravation must be pled and proven to a jury beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, in a guilty plea for that to take place, you have to admit or stipulate two aggravating factors. Now, in the case of Crystal Lee Kenny, the court advised her that it could be an open sentence all the way up to 3 years. However, the appellate court said that at sentencing, the judge stated that in aggravating Kenny's sentence, he considered her oral admission at the plea hearing, her confession to learning that Frazee had committed a homicide, and he said that that was a significant part of the sentencing decision. But according to the appellate courts, but the judge went on to explain why he felt the factual basis was an understatement of Kenny's action. The judge described in detail Kenny's involvement in the homicide perpetrated by Frazee and described Kenny's actions as cold, calculated, cruel, devoid of compassion for human life. And then based upon these findings, the district court sentenced Miss Kenny to the aggravated range of twice the maximum presumptive range. The appellate court agreed that the facts the district court used to aggravate Kenny's sentence are certainly disconcerting. However, the appellate court said, the district court made findings establishing the majority of the aggravating facts on its own. And under a case called Lopez, which is applicable in Colorado, in order for these facts to be the Blakely compliant, Kenny must have stipulated to judicial fact-finding for sentencing purposes. Basically, you have to let the judge make the decision whether there's aggravating circumstances. Otherwise, a jury would have to do that. Well, a jury wasn't going to do that because that was a guilty plea in place. So who is really to blame for this case getting remanded, reversed, and basically sent back for sentencing so that Miss Crystal Lee Kenny can only get 18 months, which will more than likely have her released to parole for a period of 1 year in almost no time? A lot of people are. First, the district attorney. This plea agreement was a gift, and I get it. They did not have the remains of Miss Kelsey Barrett in which to go forward on. So they needed to make a deal with the devil, Crystal Lee Kenny. They needed her to prove the case, but they got sloppy, and they could have put in the plea agreement the stipulated facts to make it an aggravated sentencing range. Who could also be to blame? Could it be possibly the defense attorneys? Well, they were agreeing that it was a Blakely sentence, but then, and I must note, the appellate attorney is not the attorneys that handled the case at the trial court level. It's a little surprising that that was not worked into the plea agreement. Was that the plan all along on the defense side? I don't know. The fact that the district attorney wasn't more precise in their language, also significant. There should have been something in there that she would have agreed to waive any appellate rights. However, you don't see those very much at the state level, but they're always there at the district court level. Now, nobody wants somebody to spend additional time in prison if they don't need to. That would just be unfair, and it's the wrong thing to do. But also, could there be a little blame on the part of the court? The court went through and said, this sentence will be in the aggravated range. You're waiving Blakely. But because the court didn't make specific findings of that, then he could not have done that according to the appellate courts. So Ms. Kenny's going to get resentenced and no more than 18 months. What will be interesting to see is if perhaps the district attorney moves to vacate the plea agreement, since what Ms. Kenny was supposed to do and had agreed to do was not being done in the plea agreement. And I find it hard to believe. Ms. Crystal Lee Kenny had very competent attorneys. Her attorneys were two of the best that I can say that I know here in the state of Colorado. So I find it very hard to believe that they did not advise Ms. Kenny as to the fact that the sentence was going to be in the aggravated range and it could be up to 3 years. We'll see if the district attorney tries to push back in any way. We'll see if maybe the judge maybe will try to say that the plea wasn't valid and make her reaffirm it and make the appropriate findings before he will go forward. Maybe he'll try to reject the plea, or maybe the court will just simply say, fine, I messed up. I didn't advise you properly. My fault. You get the benefit of it of 18 months. And guess what? If you mess up on parole, everybody's going to be watching, and I hope you go to prison for that extra year. But more than likely, Crystal Lee Kenny is going home. Let me know what you think. Who's to blame? Prosecutor, defense counsel, or the judge? Next on the docket, we've been following this story of the South Dakota Attorney General and his driving issues that he has. Attorney General Jason Rasborg was charged with 3 misdemeanors but no felonies regarding the death of 55-year-old Joseph Bover. Now, this case is somewhat interesting in the fact that the Attorney General didn't really stop. Although he made a call to 911, he went home, came back with his chief of staff the next day where he thought he maybe hit an animal. That's interesting, isn't it? Who drives back with your chief of staff or anyone to see if you hit an animal the next day? And ooh, just happens to be a dead body of a man, in this particular case, Mr. Bover, lying on the ground. Coincidentally, the time had passed, so when he gave a blood test, it's going to come back as negative for alcohol or any other substance. Obviously, we'll give the attorney general the presumption of innocence, which as a prosecutor, he certainly knows everyone is entitled to. But now the widow of Mr. Bover, Jenny Bover, has filed a lawsuit against Ravsport in part to get answers to the lingering questions about the crash. Now, the attorney general will have a Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination, so he may not have to give answers immediately in a deposition in the civil case. However, in most jurisdictions, if you assert the Fifth Amendment in a civil case, the jury can draw a negative inference of that in that particular case. They can't do that in the criminal case, but in a civil case, you can. The civil case will also more than likely have the attorneys file a stay of the proceedings pending the outcome of the criminal case. Now, people always kind of chuckle when I say legal troubles can happen to anyone. I've seen it over my years of practicing law, but sometimes people always think that'll never happen to me. That'll never happen to anyone I know. Well, tell that to the attorney general, who's probably always said that he is the most law-abiding person in the land. Prosecuted people for what he's being charged with. So just remember, everyone in government office, whether you're a prosecutor, you're a judge, elected official, guess what? You're human. You put your pants on every day, one pant leg at a time. Hopefully, Lady Justice will in fact be blind and treat the Attorney General like any other defendant similarly situated. No favoritism whatsoever. Next on the docket, a very interesting statement made by Attorney Mark Means. As you may recall, and we put it up on Wednesday, we had the hearing regarding attorney-client communications as well as a motion to compel in the Vallow matter. We can put a link below. We don't need to go into all the details about it. But needless to say, Lori Vallow is not getting a cell phone, and Mr. Means must work within the constraints put in place by the sheriff where Lori Vallow is being held pre-trial. Mr. Means complained that he was unable to communicate with his client, that the circumstances were absolutely terrible, and that this was the interesting statement that he filed the night before the hearing. And I'm not exactly sure why documents that are filed in this case don't make it up immediately, that they're usually days later after their filing, but it is what it is. I'm sure the people in Idaho have lots of work to do, not just to make me happy, I understand. But in the supplemental declaration of Mark Means in support of the motion and order directing attorney-client privilege communications, Mr. Means makes the following statement. I am unable to prepare a defense in this matter, provide an effective and adequate defense for my client given the tremendous restraints imposed upon me by a biased and motivated sheriff's office that seems to be undermining and interfering with my constitutional obligation to provide said defense to my client. Now, this is very similar to what Mr. Means said in court. In fact, he even said perhaps he's just going to file a discrimination suit at some point, maybe in the future. Certainly, Mr. Means does have a constitutional obligation to meet with his client, but the courts have held that it doesn't have to be in a plush conference room. It can be made available, and the circumstances are always not going to be perfect. But when he's saying, and sometimes you throw it in there, this goes to my effective representation, usually that's when there's new discovery turned over and you need additional time to prepare. What he is saying here is that he is not able to provide an effective and adequate defense for his client. I don't think that he is intentionally trying to lay the groundwork for an ineffective assistance of counsel claim. However, he's certainly making it appear that somebody's thinking about it, for sure. And for Mr. Means to say that the sheriff is being biased towards him, I find that a little hard to believe. Perhaps it could be just Mr. Means' general demeanor. If it's anything like in court, where you're supposed to at least try to be nice and present yourself to be nice, you can only imagine how he acts when he's not in front of a judge or on this TV. He may just be a real jerk, and maybe the sheriff's saying, fine, you want to be a jerk? Let's play games. We have more games than Milton freaking Bradley. Let's do this. And maybe that's why Mr. Means is having such difficulty that all the other counsel in this particular case are not having. We'll wait and see. Next on the docket, take a look at this guy. Not that mugshots can prove anything, and they certainly can't be used to imply guilt. And we give everyone that we talk about here in Crime Talk the presumption of innocence, unless and until they plead guilty or are found guilty in a court of law. But take a look at this guy, Mr. Leonard DeLillo. Can you only imagine what he's arrested for? Well, let's just say he had some pictures of some children. Well, and he had 8,000 of them. They were discovered when he took his computer into Staples to have service done on his computer. In that process, the Staples employee found the images, contacted the police, whereupon the police were able to get a warrant for the computer. They ultimately spoke with Mr. DeLillo, and he also turned over other devices and files which contained various images of people between the ages of 8 and 10 with adult men. Mr. DeLillo, whether he's charged in state or federal court, will more than likely be spending a lengthy time in prison. Even given his age of 63 right now, I think one could possibly say he'll die in prison if he is convicted. Like I've said, ladies and gentlemen, you can't make this stuff up. And you just never know who you are dealing with, which is a nice segue into go to crimetalksearch.com so that you can find out who you are dealing with. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever. But if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship. You're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. Find out who you're dealing with. You'll be happy you did. It could save you a lot of trouble. Next on the docket, a hero takes care of a bad guy. Take a look at this guy, Herbert Parrish. 82 years old. He's a Vietnam veteran. You can tell by his hat. Well, he pummeled a home invader who came into the house, slashed his wife with a knife. Let me tell you how he took care of him. A man by the name of Harold Reynolds broke into the home of our hero and his wife, and he had a knife with him. He knocked down the hero's wife to the ground and slashed her forehead. He apparently lived in a nearby mobile home community and approached the house, knocked on the door, and said he was looking for a missing dog, whereupon he entered without permission and then pushed down the hero's wife and, as I said, slashed her. Well, Mr. Herbert Parrish, our hero, was not going to have any of that. He snatched a firearm off a wall mount after he saw his wife being pushed down, and he pummeled Mr. Runnels with the butt of the rifle. That's right. They teach you that in the military. He probably learned that in Vietnam. Don't mess with people that have been in the military. They know how to take care of their loved ones and themselves. Now, fortunately, the parishes are not going to be charged in any way, not that they should. When an armed invader comes into your house, certainly you have a right to defend yourself. And so, Mr. Parish, you are a hero. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. We're going to do this. We'll give you a quick recap, and then you can vote on who is the dumb criminal contestant of the week, and the winner will receive a Crime Talk mug. Now, our contestants today, there are two of them. We don't know their names, but we know that they're 34 and 44. We also know that they went to the Orlando Convention Center last month, and they received a vaccination for COVID-19. They returned dressed as grannies. That's right, dressed up, trying to appear much older than they actually are, to butt in line of all the people that have earned it because of their age to go and be protected. The people at the Orlando Convention Center spotted this, they figured it out, and they confronted these two ladies. They weren't arrested for anything, at least not as of yet. Not sure what crime they committed other than they jumped to the front of the line, and maybe it's some sort of fraud. I don't know under Florida law if there's any law that's been violated. But the police let these two ladies know that what they've done may not be criminal, but it is selfish for them to butt in front of the people that need it and deserve the vaccination, the people that are truly in danger of getting COVID and possibly having very bad symptoms that could result in their death. And what's even more so is this is wasted because they were back for their second shot, which they're no longer going to be able to get. And so the first one is more than likely wasted. So although they may not be criminal, they're certainly dumb, that's for sure. So we have those two contestants for today's contestant. Then we have to jump back to Monday. We had Joanna Zielinski, who stabbed her sister with an EpiPen because she was allergic to drunk people. Tuesday, we had Robert Halleck, who tried to obtain a gun permit using the name of Obama. That's right, Barack Obama. Wednesday, Kendrick Hill, he's the man that was sentenced to 45 years because he kidnapped somebody, kind of tortured them with a fire underneath the chair, and live streamed it and got 45 years over a $20 debt. Thursday, we had Bruce Morway, who was on parole, told his parole officer he was headed to a job interview. Well, not really. He went and robbed a bank. And because he was not wearing his mask properly, his parole officer was able to identify him. So we have a bunch of geniuses this week, ladies and gentlemen. You let me know who should be the dumb criminal contestant of the week and the winner of Crime Talk merchandise. Hope you had a great week. Seems like it's been kind of a long one, hasn't it? Anyway, hope you have a great weekend. If you weren't able to catch all the videos this week, we'll have a recap on Saturday as well. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you next week on Crime Talk.